Dreams complete. Dreams can complete, be complete. Dreams can be done, dreams can be fulfilled, dreams are fulfilled, but only if you really want it. If you feel sorry for yourself, forget it. If you feel that it works for some other people but doesn't work for you, forget it. I was just talking to Mr. Evans here, who just sold his concrete business. And he'd been in concrete business for many years, and he sold his concrete business for a very beautiful sum, so he could live the rest of his life now very comfortably off what he sold his business for. He sold it to his competitor. and his competitor wants him to be his advisor, and he says his competitor is going to be out of business soon because he does not use good business practices and doesn't know concrete. And then I explained to him a little bit about my understanding of concrete, and he says that's exactly the problem, that people do slipshod jobs and pretend that they're not. So, you know, so I talked with him for a few minutes, and then he was saying he wants to buy a motorhome like this and enjoy it and go around the country. And I told him what this would cost and what we paid for it and things like that. And then he asked a very stupid question. He says, how many miles do you get to a gallon? And I said, it doesn't matter. And then he said, how many hours do you get to your different things, you know? I said, if you buy something because you want it and you love it and it serves your purpose, it doesn't matter what the cost is because it's not very much. It's always less than motels and hotels and eating out and things like that. And, well, I never thought of that, you know. And I said, well, that's the thing. Begin to appreciate who you are. He said, I'm beginning to. He says, I'm retiring because I want to enjoy life. He said, my dad turned 62 last year, and he retired from being a teacher, and he was a very good teacher. He was the best teacher. He has been teaching for years and years and years, the greatest teacher. And he's going to retire and enjoy life, and then he found out he had cancer of the lungs. And he doesn't know how long he has to live. And I said, What is this that you're saying about your father? And he said, well, my father is... well, first, before we got into that, he asked me, you know, what I do, you know, and what sort of work I'm in and stuff like that. And I told him. And he asked a few details about it. And so then afterwards we spoke about his father. And he said that his father had this condition and that it was kind of tough, and his father was such a good man, and that he was going to have to die so young. And I said, oh, it's all right. I said, you know, don't worry about those things. I said, I see your father whole and perfect. He says, and I said, I see your father whole and perfect. I said, I don't care about appearances. I don't care about what other people experience or don't experience. I said, remission of cancer is a very common thing. And I see your father whole and perfect. I said, as soon as you begin seeing your father whole and perfect, you will begin to enjoy his company and stop worrying whether he can do this or whether he can. My dad never even smoked and never even did this, you know, and he shouldn't have cancer lung. I said, hey, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. You cause in motion for yourself that your dad is a fantastic man, which you already believe, and that he's whole and perfect, which you already believe, and then don't go around telling anybody else about a condition that's an appearance. I said, you're fortunate you told me. And he says, I don't know. And I said, your father's whole and perfect. And he said, see him over there? He's taking pictures of the kids with the birds and stuff like that. And he's just vital, dynamic, thin, powerful young man, you know, just wonderful. And I said, yeah, he's whole and perfect, you know. And he says, oh, this is a new thought for me. He said, we were ready to bury Dad, you know. And I said, well, start to play with him. Start having fun with him. Taking him on your adventures, you know. Get out there and enjoy life. And pretty soon you get sick and tired of him. You say, Dad, go do it yourself. And he'll take his healthy body and go do it himself. And you do it with yourself, you know. Of course, he'll probably pick up another wife along the way and a few other goodies along the way, but that's okay too. But you see, you must be complete in your dream. You must be complete in your things. That was just a casual encounter. It said Evans Concrete on his shirt, and I said, oh, you're in concrete. He said, I just sold my business. I said, my dad was in concrete, and I had worked for him a long time and stuff, and we talked a little bit. But you see, then he brought that up. I didn't ask him to tell me about his dad. I imagine it comes off his lips pretty easy for everybody that he tells everybody about his dad. And he's hoping his dad will die so that he doesn't have to worry about him and fool around with him, and he and his wife can get about having a ball, playing with their dogs and their kids and stuff like that. Oh, you really think that that's what they're doing? Well, certainly. They're putting the cause in motion. We only know about others what they tell us. And if they tell us that they're sick or poor or sad or in any way limited, then that's what they are. And if they start telling us that they're wonderful, they're fantastic, they're glorious, they're perfect, they're free, they're great, then that's all we know about them. And remember, the things you say are a perfect indication of what you believe. Now, do you believe you deserve a motorhome like this? If you deserve a motorhome like this, then you certainly deserve to have everything that goes along with it. You can afford the propane you use, you can afford the gasoline you use, you can afford the other things that you need to take care of it, and the maintenance of it from time to time. All those things are just fine. You can afford them, you see? But if you start thinking, whoops, you know, can't afford it, well then sell it and get yourself a canoe, you know? Then it just takes energy. Canoes are fun, but they'll never replace a motorhome, will they? So, when you have your dreams, dream completely. Dream exactly what you have in your mind. Dream whatever it is that makes you very happy. Whatever it is that's going to bring about in your life what makes you pleased and makes you just enjoy life. Now, what is going to make you pleased and enjoy life? Do you know? What is it that really turns you on? You want to be a spiritual master? That's a crock of bull, too. If you want to be a spiritual master, you'd be putting your full attention in it. And you don't want to be a spiritual master. You want to be a fulfilled human being, perhaps. Pull it around a little more, too. You want to be a fulfilled human being. What's a fulfilled human being? That's a person that lives in a healthy body, in a healthy mind, in a healthy world. Just having a ball, going riding on horses if that pleases you, going canoeing, going, that all sounds like fun stuff. Yeah, isn't that nice? Does a healthy person, a fulfilled person have to have a job? If they want one. Do they have to have income? If they want it. Do they have, you have everything. For instance, you could be a monk and have everything. And go off and do the various adventures you want to do. And you don't have to say, I think we should go to the beach today. I think we should go horseback riding. I think we should do this or that. You don't say that. You put in your consciousness. What the hell? That's what your consciousness is for. Put things in it. You put in your consciousness. This weekend, it would be wonderful to be sailing in the Pacific. To go sailing in the bay and out in the Pacific, that would be just great. And so then you clowns get in the car and you drive down to the beach and you go out in the pier and you see this handsome young man floating by in his lovely boat and you wave to him and say, hey! He says, you want a ride? Sure! And so you get a ride. And you go off. Now, you don't own that boat. You don't take care of that boat. You don't have to worry about what it costs. And he probably even served you some of his peanuts. You know? And so, this is the thing to do. I wrote a news story about a friend, and a person who, I wasn't a friend then, but I wrote a news story about this guy, and he took me out in his sailboat, his 21-foot Viking sloop. And we sailed all over the bay and out in the Pacific and had a good time. And we did this two or three times. He says, Herb, you sail great. He says, take the extra sail from my car and use it anytime you want. Don't worry about whether I want to use it or not. If it's here and I want to use it, I'll just rent one if it's not here. So don't give it a thought. He could afford it. You know, it didn't bother him. And he maintained that boat. He had it painted. He had it taken care of. And for years, And Mark even yet remarks about it. He says, that was a nice boat. And Faith and Mark and I sailed in that all the time. We take our friends out in there. We didn't own it. We didn't take care of it. We didn't. We could have. We could have bought several like that, but we had really no interest in owning it. We only had an interest in using it whenever we wanted to. And it was there. But consciousness. We put the cause in motion. We wanted a Chris Craft to go water skiing in. And so one of my clients had a Chris Craft. He says, Herb, watch over my house on the beach. I'm not there very often. Just watch over, take care of it. And he says, and use the boats and use these things and have fun with them. He says, they're all insured. There's no sweat about anything. You just have a ball. So here I had my 4 or 5 year old son sitting at the helm of this 18-foot Chris Craft, zipping out in the ocean, pulling me on my skis behind, going from Laguna Beach to Newport Beach, up to Huntington Beach, back to Newport Beach, and down to Dana Point. You know, that's miles. And here this little 4-year-old kid, 5-year-old kid, whatever he was at the time, scooting along, and he liked to make turns. And I said, I will let you steer if you promise not to make turns. Because, you know, when he was 2 years old, we were in the Mississippi River, and he was in the mayor's boat there. It was just about a 12-foot speed boat, and I would let him steer it, 2 years old. And he'd love to turn it. Oh, Mark, straighten out for a little while, please. Make you dizzy. But, again, there. I was 26, 7 years old. And because Mark was 2, I was 30 years old. And so Mark was driving his boat. And then when we were in Atwater, the mayor owned an airplane. And he was always taking me up flying. And Mark liked to go along with us. And we'd fly over the countryside and do all these things. Mayor Arnie Buller was his name. See, interesting. Long-term memory comes back just perfect. And we just had such a good time flying. And I didn't own the airplane. I used to fly, but I wasn't flying currently, but I had my license, and it was wonderful. It was wonderful. Every time I turn around, something like that takes place where whatever it is that gives me joy and happiness is mine. And I never worry about anything. And Faith wanted to use our big Land Cruiser Studebaker to go to work, which was 3 blocks down the street. And, of course, I worked 3 blocks down the street, too. But Mark and I, we used the motor scooter. And he'd go along with me as I'd go to work. This is before he got in kindergarten. And he'd go along with me, standing in front of me, and I'd be running the motor scooter around, and we'd be driving out on the freeways and going to the farms and writing farm features. And then the farmers would grab, the farmer kids would grab them and take them on their horses and take them on their buggies and just show them a great time and what it's like to be a farm boy. But you see, when you just enter into life's joy and you just think, not even wouldn't it be fun, but just think, I am fun. I am joy. Your dream is complete. You don't have to give it all sorts of names, but just go in and enjoy it, because life is so filled with wonderful things, fantastic things. And every time I turn around in my newspaper work, I had a lot of work to do. I had the entire newspaper to run as far as the editor goes. Writing the stories and editing the stories and preparing them for the press and taking the pictures and going to the news events and taking pictures of them and going to sports events, which I had no interest in, and taking pictures of them. And then Jim Sanford came along, and he just started to worship me, and he wanted to learn how to do photojournalism and things like that. And he hated sports, but I needed to have the sports covered. So I'd send him out to cover the sports. And he wrote good sports stories. And all the kids in school wanted to get close to him because it was just high school sports. They wanted to get close to him because he was writing for the newspaper. They wanted to get their names in the newspaper and stuff like that. And so he wrote very good stories, and they helped him write those good stories. And then he'd come in the dark room, and he'd help me develop the pictures and create the pictures. Then he'd help in the press room and do all these things. He was just a 14, 15-year-old kid. Just fantastic. And but you see, these are things that happen when you have things to do and you're not worried about it and you're not overburdened. Everybody wants to help you. Everybody wants to make your job easy. Everybody wants to just do everything for you. And this is what life is all about, is having this complete dream fulfilled in a wonderful, dynamic way, that's just with all the joys of your heart. And if you get too particular, if you get too particular about the dream, you know, like, I want a boat, and I want it 18 feet, and I want to do this here, and I want to do that, I want to have fun. And so the dream fulfilled itself to have fun. Now, we wanted a motorhome. And Ellen had no idea what kind of motorhome we wanted. I had no idea. I didn't even know we wanted a motorhome, really. But I knew we were thinking about it. And then, lo and behold, there in the parking lot of Fry's Electronics, they were having this big sale, this big motorhome show. And we were there to buy one of the printers, the 8000 printer, I believe, at that time. And so Ellen says, let's look at the motorhomes. I said, no, after the printers. First we buy the printer, then we play. So then we went and looked at the motorhomes. The first one we looked at was this one. And then we looked at all the others. And we drove this one. And we said, we'll take this one. And he wanted $30,000 more than we paid for it. $30,000 more. And so we told him, no, this one in 1996 when it was built would cost $125,000. That's a lot of money for a motorhome. And they wanted $95,000 for it when we were there. And we told them, no, $65,000, that's all. And so they said, oh, we can't sell it for that. We can't sell it. We said, well, that's okay. We don't care. We really weren't going to buy a motorhome today anyhow. But if you want to sell it, we'll buy it. It's done.
And if you buy it today, we leave it for, then we give you for 60, they said it. And then we just made the decision right away.
If you buy it today?
Yeah, they said, are you buying it today? Because then you make the deal the same day.
Oh, the deal the same day. Yeah, right. And we made this deal the same day. But they finally just came down in their price, and it took them an hour and a half. And we just sat in the motorhome looking around, seeing how pleasant it was, imagining ourselves driving here and there with it and just having a ball. And Ellen handled it like a trooper. And so then they finally came back, and including tax, license, insurance, and all that stuff, the price that we wanted. And we didn't care. We just were having fun. What the heck? How many times do you go out and play games buying motorhomes and be serious that you really will buy it if you can? And have them meet your price. But this is doing the things that delight you. When I started out the University of Healing, we didn't have a lot of money because I took the vow of poverty from the church where I was. I was getting $100,000 a year there, plus my houses, plus the car, plus everything else, which was quite a nice chunk of money. And so then when I came to Kenpo, to the Meal Meditations to start the church, start the University of Healing, I had nothing. I had nothing. Just a lot of nothing. And so we rented the property for $175 a month, I believe it was, including the house and the swimming pool and the Socrates Hall and everything, which was all in terrible shape. And we couldn't even afford $175 a month. And we paid rent for about 3 months, and then we couldn't pay rent for about a year. 1 year he let us not pay rent. We had to pay it back, but 1 year. But during that year, we got our books out, and we ate, and not very much, but we got our books out, we got our courses out, we got students, and we were able to pay back the rent and also keep up the rent. And then a year after that, he decided to sell it for $100,000. But we weren't in a position to buy it, so we went elsewhere. But we did it. It was an impossible dream. We had nothing. We had nothing, and we went in there with nothing. And everything came out because we held fast to our dream, at least my dream. Mark's dream was building ultralights, which he did while we were there. He went out and bought parts for ultralights and built his ultralights and flew them in our front yard there. And it's amazing what you can do when your dream is not letting you be limited by money, not letting you be limited by the rules of the road, which say that that's an impossible thing to do. You have to have so much money to do this and so much money to do that. Your dream does not ever have to be limited by money. Your dream is only limited by what you can dream about and what you see for yourself. Now, you say, should Greg be so specific on his house? Yes, he should be specific on his house, because that's part of his dream. Will his house manifest pretty much like that? You bet. Well, Herb, you just got done a while ago saying not to be too specific. Yes, it is true. Don't be too specific about the wife you're going to marry, that it's going to be that woman or that man, and you do that, and the perfect one comes along, and you've already made up your mind on the one that you had chosen because it looked so good. You know, you never know. You may get along well with some person, and some other person comes along that you get along so much better with, so much better with. Like Mark, he married Ramona, and they had a nice marriage. But then Ramona had her program for herself, and Mark had his program, and the two didn't quite fit together. And so they separated after 5 years, and Mark was not about to jump into another marriage because he didn't want to make another mistake. And so he had many friends, many relationships, and when the right girl came along, he knew it. He knew it. And what did she say to him? She said, 2 years on the internet talking back and forth. And that's really something. And for a man who is not too interested in writing, for Mark to communicate on the internet is quite something. And I think, to me, the thing that topped it off with her was when he said, come live with me in California. And she says, if we get married... And he's, well, all right, we'll get married. So he was ready. And his dream came through. But it wasn't a push thing. It wasn't a thing of passion, of sex, and need, and want, and so forth. It was just a pleasant happiness together. And when they did get married, they became the most delightful couple you could imagine. Mark had never been one to kiss in public or hold hands. But with Leslie, that was just something that was impossible not for him not to do. But you see, when you dream your dream, and you let your dream manifest for you, your dream can be a person, your dream can be a job, your dream can be a place, and your dream can be a circumstances, an environment, or anything that you want. When you just let it happen. Now, is his father going to live? That's up to them. I don't give a damn. That's up to them. I'm not wishing him any harm or anything else, but if the father doesn't want to live, that's his business. If he doesn't want his father to live, that's his business. If they each want to live, if he wants to live and his father wants to live, he wants his father to live, then they put the cause in motion. He lives. You understand? If they don't want him to live, he goes around telling everybody he's sick. Telling everybody he's got this here, telling everybody, if you don't want something, don't talk about it. If you want something, talk about it if you wish. And even there, it pays oftentimes to keep your mouth closed and keep your secrets, keep it in your heart. But if I told him, I said, you want to kill your dad, don't you? You know what he'd say to me? How dare you, pow, knock my teeth out. You know? But that's what he's doing. That's what anyone is doing who goes around talking about the illness of their beloved one. That's what anyone is doing who talks about their limitations, their poverty, their lack of education, their lack of friends, their lack of relationships. Go and do it. Have it. Enjoy it. Be it. And then you'll never talk about the lack of it again because you're fantastic. You're glorious. But if you're going to dream your dream, dream it completely. He can dream his dream of having his father with him, traveling around in the motorhome, letting his dad cooperate on part payment for the motorhome. You know, he doesn't need to do that, but, you know, that way it'd be a mutual effort, and have his dad drive. Now, you remember Mark, when he fell down and hurt himself there, didn't hurt himself, but we thought he did, and the x-ray was taken, and finally they saw that nothing was the matter, but they kept him overnight in the hospital. And the next morning, Mark said, I want to drive. Well, you know, anyone who had a concussion or had a blow to the head, it might be dangerous. But I told Mark he was whole and perfect. I said, you're whole and perfect. And he says, I know, Dad, I know. Could I not let him drive? If I believe he's whole and perfect, I must stand up for that belief, even though it jeopardizes my life. And it doesn't jeopardize my life if I believe he's whole and perfect. Do you understand? Do you believe enough in your dream? Does he believe enough in his father being whole and perfect that he would allow his father to do things that require a good lung or two, you know? Believe in yourself. Believe in your dream. Follow your dream. Stand up for it. And don't let yourself get pushed around. Because if you let yourself get pushed around by what? Appearances. The appearance of cancer and the appearance of wholeness, they're just, you know, click, click. Same thing.
Click, click.
Yeah. What do you want? You want wholeness? Then keep that foremost in your mind forever and ever and ever. If you want something else, keep that foremost in your mind forever and ever and ever. Healing is a matter of individual consciousness. But we keep a person in our consciousness who is ill because that makes us feel superior. Ooh, sounds terrible, doesn't it? But that's true. It gives us a chance to feel superior, and they need us to help them. They need us to take care of them. That's the way our attitudes are. It's too bad, but wasteful. To dream completely means that we have a pretty good idea what our dream is. And if you don't know what your dream is, you can't dream completely. If you have no idea what desire is in your heart, what goal is in your heart, where you want to go, how you want to achieve whatever you want to achieve, you can't do it. You can't do it because you don't know what it is. What do you want to be? We say that to children so often, and they have the vaguest idea. What do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be an astronaut. I want to be a fireman. I want to be a doctor. I want to be this. And of course, when they grow up, they've changed their minds five or six times, maybe more, and that's fine. We understand that. That's all part of growing up. But you're growing up now. What do you want to be? A jerk? You are. You're a jerk when you say that you can't do things. Every time you tell me you hurt, every time you tell me you got a problem, every time you tell me that somebody doesn't like you or something's not going your way, you're a jerk. You're stupid. If you would say to me, Herb, I want to be more positive in my life. Ah, let's go for it. Herb, I want to experience even a more perfect body than I have now. It's fantastic, but I can see it being even more fantastic. I'd like to jump over the moon. You know, like the cow jumped over the moon. Yes, yes, yes. It's silly, but it is the idea. I want to be even more perfect than I am. I want to be even more wonderful. I want to be even more brilliant than I am. I want to be able to stand before a group of people and talk and have them listen to me and say, don't you dare sit down. Keep talking. We love what you're saying. Keep it up. Keep it up. You see? Wouldn't that be nice if people said that when every time you got up to talk? They'd say, take the chair away. Don't let them sit down. Keep them going. And so what do? Anybody quickly? I sit
on the floor.
On the floor. I stop. Why did you say I stop? Yes.
Yes.
Hi, I locked myself out of my car. Do you have a coat hanger by chance? A wire coat hanger?
Right now? Do we have what?
He has locked himself out of his car.
A coat hanger.
But we have only the plastic ones.
Tell him you look.
Yeah, we are looking.
But tell him it's plastic.
Just a moment.
Okay, thank you.
So, follow your dream. Now, this guy locked himself out of his car, and he needs a plastic coat, a wire coat hanger. Yeah. Do we have a piece of wire anyplace underneath
the toolbox?
Yeah, look in the toolbox, see what we might have. Thank you, Greg.
Or a hanger? Is there nothing?
They're plastic. Yeah. But, what?
Yeah, I just looked in, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, thank you.
Somebody brought one.
So now, why have we created this fellow coming here asking for a coat hanger at this moment?
For us to speak our word that this car is
open.
Yeah, his car is open, and it works perfectly. Yeah. So this is an opportunity. Everything is an opportunity. And we are not upset with him. We're not concerned. We just do everything perfectly. And, of course, we're like the house on the top of the hill here. And people come to us knowing that we have everything. And we do. We have Greg to help with this stuff and whatever. But this is part of what our dreams are. What is our fulfilled dream? Now, could we have said to the fellow, no, we don't have any, we only have plastic coat hangers? Could we have said that? And could we have been off the hook right then? Couldn't we? But we didn't do that, did we? What was his question?
If we have a coat hanger.
No. What was the question?
If we have the coat...
He said, my car door is locked. Do you have a coat hanger?
Right.
See, you have to understand, it's the whole sentence. My car door is locked, do you have a coat hanger? Now, what is our answer? We have only plastic coat hangers. Would that help? Ellen?
Yeah.
We have only plastic coat hangers. Would that help? And then he would say what?
No.
He said, no, okay, sorry. And then he'd be on his way. And Gregor wouldn't have had to go out. Did you help him at all?
I didn't know, there's nothing.
That's fine. But we were just saying, Greg, he came to the door.
Yeah.
He said, I locked my car door, I can't get in. Do you have a plastic, do you have a coat hanger? And what is our answer?
We'll just have a look.
Our answer is, we have only plastic coat hangers. Would that help you?
Well, I wasn't quite sure. I thought we might have one.
Yeah. We didn't, though, did we?
No. So that's why I went and had a look there, you know.
But the answer is, he meant in our closet. Do we have a coat hanger in our closet that might help him? And the answer is, we have only plastic coat hangers. Will that help you? And his answer then to us would be no, and then we just continue with our lecture here.
That's right.
But you see, this is why you always... Is that the... Ellen?
It's only above here. It's not the rest. And that's,
no, that's not
big
enough. He
that's
needs to reach
enough.
Down inside.
Yes,
so, okay. But you see, this is the simplicity of it. The simplicity, he asked a question, and we haven't learned to answer questions yet. We had an immediate compassionate concern about the poor jerk being locked out of his car. The idiot, you know, not having a key outside of his car like we do. So if you guys ever don't put the key back into the compartment here and somebody doesn't have it locked, you'll have to crawl in through a window. Yes? Didn't you do it? Oh, you did. So you're okay. But no, I'm saying these things in jest, but not really in jest. We must be serious. If anyone asks a question, we ponder the question immediately. Do you have a coat hanger? My car is locked. I lock my car door. And our first statement would be, we do not help people get into their cars because we don't know whether that really is your car or not. You might be busting into somebody else's car. Now, Irene says, my God, would you say such a terrible thing like that? Well, why... If we can create them coming here asking for a coat hanger, we can create a thief coming and asking. Where do you put money that you don't want to be stolen? You lay it out in plain sight. For them to come and ask us for a coat hanger is the same thing. They're asking in plain sight, you know, as though it's their car and their freedom to do whatever they want. Herb, how can you say those things? It's easy. It's easy. I don't put that cause in motion for myself. But I'm putting that cause in motion for you guys, because one of you thought that thought. Yep. One of you thought that thought. One of you thought, maybe it's not his car. And one of you thought, Yes. Why would I come up with this thought right now if it wasn't yours? Do I think only my thoughts or your thoughts?
I know.
That's terrible, isn't it?
It's so far.
But then I wouldn't
be aware
of it at all.
All right. Is his father whole and perfect?
Yes.
How long did it take for you to think he was whole and perfect after I told you his father had a problem?
Instantly,
yeah. You're a good practitioner, huh? That's great. But this is what we must learn to do. And why did that man come and ask us for a coat hanger?
To speak our word, that it is...
To speak our word, that your car, not out loud to him, to us, that his car is open, and that we go back, just a minute, we'll run back there. I only have plastic coat hangers, and show him one. Would that help? Nope. Thank you very much. And you've been off the hook. You would have done what he asked you to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm over-laboring this thing here because I want you to recognize, answer the damn question! Answer it! Answer it the way it's asked! Do you have a coat hanger? I locked my car door. Just a minute. Go back. Yes, we have plastic coat hangers. Show it to him. That's all we have is plastic coat. No, it won't do. Thank you very much. End. We have done our job. He has done his. But no, we didn't. We had to have a conversation first, as Ellen started to talk to him there, and say, just a minute, let me check. And see here and there. But if she had just said, just a minute, I will check. And then she runs back and looks in the closet and brings a plastic coat hanger, the bigger the better, a plastic coat hanger out and say, this is what we got, can that help? No. Okay, sorry. Boom, boom. That's important. Now, if you didn't want to be part of his nefarious activity, nefarious means perhaps it's not legal. Okay? If you didn't want to be part of that, then what would happen? You would go back there, and you would definitely bring out a plastic coat hanger, regardless of how many metal ones you had.
Mm.
And say, will this one help? Don't say it's the only one you got. Will this one help? No. And then he'll say, okay. But you have to be master of yourself. You don't have to lie. He said, do you have a coat hanger? He didn't say, do you have a wire coat hanger that I can fit down into my window to open my door? He said, do you have a coat hanger? And whether he thought wire or not, that's his business. And we didn't want to be a part of it or did want to be a part of it. Now, this is a perfect illustration for us. It's a perfect illustration of answering the question. He told me his father had cancer of the lungs, and that he had just retired, and he was doing fine, and he had just retired, and he went in for his physical checkup, and they found the cancer. And they don't know how long he has to live. They found the cancer, they don't know how long he has to live. They found the cancer, they don't know how long he has to live. They found the cancer, you don't know how... Don't put that in my consciousness. Or Herb, you're putting it in our consciousness. That's right. That's right.
That he's all imperfect.
The moment he said that to me, I didn't say anything to him about his father. I said, oh, how nice to retire. Now he can do the things he wants to do. He just told me his father had the problem. And he said, yeah, but I don't know how long he has to live. I said, I see your father whole and perfect. I see your father fantastic right now. I see your father living a long, happy, healthy life. I see him whole and perfect, whole and perfect. And he looked at me with a wry grin on his face. Yeah, sure, you know, mm-hmm. And then I told him. I said, remission in cancer is common as dirt. And you can have that experience of remission if you wish it or not. I see your father whole and perfect. I didn't go into a lot of details because that's not my place. I merely stood my ground where I was. I see his father whole and perfect. Now, it would be so easy to in our hearts say, oh dear, that poor man, here he is only 62 years old, retired after having been a wonderful teacher all of his life, not smoking, not drinking, not doing anything bad, raising me as his perfect son, and you know, this sort of thing, and poor daddy, poor daddy, poor daddy, poor daddy, poor daddy, poor daddy. My God, he's killing the old man. He's killing him. If he would say, my dad's, we don't know how long he's got to live, but we're going to make every moment of his life exciting and dynamic and wonderful. We love him. He's a wonderful dad. And then I'd say, and he's whole and perfect too. Whole and perfect? I never thought of that. I never thought that he maybe had a chance to be different, to be what he wanted to be. I never thought, hey, I buy that, I buy that. You follow me? You see, that's up to us in our consciousness to think these things. We as practitioners, more so, to think these things. And we cannot allow somebody else's unfortunate dream to kill them and to mess them up, or to mess us up. And that's what it does. It messes them up. It messes us up. I was thinking I was going to say, Ellen, why don't you take him a gist? I thought, no. It may not be their desire. It may be their desire just to let him drift away. And it's not our privilege to go around shoving things at people. He came into our life because he wanted to ask me that question. He wanted to get the answer that I gave him. Whether he wants to get more or not, that's up to him. I told him we have the University of Healing. We established a church so we could have this University of Healing as our primary emphasis and work beautifully with the government and so forth and so on. And this is who we are. And he knows that. And he knows we're in Campo. And he knows, you know, whatever he knows. And if he thought, pop a hole, I got to talk to that guy a little more. Do you think he feels my charisma at all? He feels my charisma if he wants something done. Now, does he know all of you? Right down to a gnat's eyebrow. You were playing with his babies, his puppies, his dog, the mama and the kid. And you did you see his kids come out of the car and be around him very much? Nah. Mama was standing off eating a sandwich, and Papa was standing there talking to you guys mostly, and the dogs. He knows you. He knows us. He knows what we're doing. He knows that we're real. And he knows me, because he kept me from going down to check my altimeter. But that's okay. And I talked with him, and everything went just fine. Now, if he wants his dad to be whole and perfect, he will grab every branch, everything to cling onto, to manifest that for his dad, and he'll get it, won't he? Mm-hmm. I'm interested that you guys are leaving the bottle of wine sitting right outside there, right, and everybody walks by, sees the bottle of wine, and like even he says, oh, I see you have a bottle of wine there. He says, have your motor home, and you travel, and you have your bottle of wine. And I said, well, we really don't care too much for the wine. We like the non-alcoholic wine, but we had a party and there was no other kind, so he was drinking a little wine now and then. He says, this is not bad at all, you know. But you see, you and I, we have to stand so firm for what our convictions are. We have to stand so strongly on what we believe. And what do you believe? Do you believe in healing? Do you believe in wholeness? Are you going to make someone whole? Are you going to make someone be healed? No, not at all. You can never do that. What you can do is to see them whole and perfect, to see them fantastic, to see them joyous. But it doesn't matter if they choose to be it or not. In your mind and my mind, that's what they are, okay? In our consciousness, that's what they are. We can go in the hospital. We can speak our word for somebody, and they're whole and perfect. And then even while we're standing there, they wheel them out of the room dead as a doornail, you know. But in our consciousness, they're still whole and perfect. Huh?
I don't see that.
I see. You don't see them whole and perfect, even as they're being rolled out and dead?
No, that's like speaking of two worlds.
Well, I meant to take it a little further. So we see them rolled out there. And we see him whole and perfect. And we're strong on this. We are definite on this. There is no death. There is no being rolled out on a gurney dead as a doornail. And then they get him down to the morgue. And as they're getting ready to work on him, the guy sits up and says, oh, that was a good nap. Where are my clothes? You know. Why not?
Sure.
Why not? It's cold in here. You know. I'm naked. I don't have any clothes. Where are my clothes? You know. That sounds stupid. But isn't that possible?
Yes, it is.
And has that happened a number of times?
Perfect practitioner. It must be like that.
It must be.
They haven't done the job.
And just because they reel them out, that doesn't mean they're dead. That means that they're taking a nap or something, you know. Jesus kept saying they're only sleeping.
We have always been back and forth with this. But this morning, for the first time in months, you have again said it is up to the practitioner to... it's up to the practitioner, not to the one being treated for. We have always said, oh, if the one being treated for wants to be, but that's...
No, just a minute. There's two aspects to this here. There's only one at life that's true. Yeah. But the practitioner heals himself first, and then sees the person whole, and there's nothing more to do. Okay. Now, that the person might have the illusion of being dead in their world is a totally other thing. In the practitioner's world, there's only one world, huh?
Yes.
Well, in the
is that right?
Well, but the practitioner, that all depends if we are playing from the absolute point, seeing it from the absolute or from... because in
there is no absolute and relative.
Yeah, but the practitioner is, well, that is the illusions. We are playing here with the illusion. We're saying that the illusion is not perfect. We're making a judgment about the illusion of perfect or not perfect.
That's right.
So the practitioner sees only an is. And that is perfect.
If someone comes to you, you're the practitioner, and says, please treat for me, I have cancer of the lung, and I want to be whole and perfect.
For you, it's whole and
just
perfect.
Just listen to him for a minute.
And then that person dies. Then
the one, the practitioner, or the one with the lungs?
The one with the lungs.
Okay.
Sorry, but then you haven't done your job. If he asks specifically, I want to be whole and perfect, in other words, I want to have my lungs in divine order, in perfect divine order.
Okay, sir.
Yeah.
Are you positive enough, you know, are you convicted enough that he is whole and perfect?
That's another question.
And if you're convicted, if you believe what you're doing,
that's the only
and you are convicted enough in what you do, that there is only health, there is only wholeness, there is only life, then you cannot even have the faintest illusion of death in your consciousness.
That's yeah, but right. The point is, Herb,
I'm
then...
I'm talking about a principle.
I know, I'm talking about it too.
But then the point is that we it's not that we are convicted or anything, it's just that we are have returned to our original purity and integrity, and that's what we see.
If we've returned to our original purity and integrity, we cannot see anything but that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only from...
Wouldn't that be an interesting world if we return to our original purity and integrity and see everything from our original purity and integrity? Everything around us is what? Alive and vital, dynamic, living in its archetypal reality.
Exactly.
Wouldn't that be exciting?
It can only be that
because...
Yeah, but then it
is... But that doesn't need any...
That is
and that doesn't need any...
You have to be... That just go over the board. Out of the boat now and say, only when you are a master you can do that.
No, that nobody.
If someone has trained himself, let's say, to
see you always
to always be a rainmaker, let's say.
Yeah.
And he is just has trained that field to be a rainmaker.
And he's good.
And he goes in the desert, wherever he goes, he creates rain, and he's good. So can someone be that healer who always sees the perfection, and yet he is not.
Not
master
always.
In
yes, that's
not,
true.
Not in all.
Yeah, but then all. It's a mental. Then it's a mental activity.
Which it anyhow is.
Mm-hmm. But the beautiful thing is, I love your arguments. The beautiful thing is, it can be either or. If you live in a world of limitation, then there's death and life. Mm-hmm. If you live in a world of principle, there can only be death or life.
Choice.
Huh?
It was the
same.
It's how I want to treat my world.
You said the same sentence.
Yes. Did I say the same sentence?
Yeah. The word, the sound of death and life had a little bit different.
But you see, this, there only is life and death. No. Death is as much a reality as life is a reality.
Sure.
Because everything is.
Which illusion do we want?
And which illusion do you want? And you can have either illusion, but you can't have both.
That's right.
Yeah.
But
no, because
you can have both illusions, but you can't have either.
One moment, you can only have one.
That's right.
You can have both illusions, but you can't have either. What?
Of course,
that's why it's all mental. And it has
And what does mental mean? Mental means L-A-W.
Mental means to live in the illusion, right, in the appearance.
Yes.
Manipulating. What
is a human being but an appearance?
That's what I mean. But that's what it is all about. Illusion is,
it's mental.
Feeling is manipulating illusion.
Yeah, but when you talk to her, for instance, about somebody which we
is dead,
he said, they're not dead.
Yeah, because he sees beyond
the
illusion of death means that they have no life in them. And in them means in their spirit, in their reality, in their everlastingness, you know. But the physical cloak that they may put on for a while may be cast off. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many everlastingly alive people do we see in the world? We don't. We see a lot of illusions. What was your comment?
Stefan wants the physical cloak, otherwise he missed the healing or the seeing the person.
Yeah, exactly.
And you think the person most of the time wants the physical cloak, maybe too.
Yeah, but do you remember that evening when we talked in the restaurant about it?
Yeah,
and he said, don't you see all these people here around? We talked, somebody who has died, I don't know, was it when you... We were in the restaurant, he was still living in 134. You were there, we three, there was another person picked up, you were maybe there. When we were in the restaurant, we talked about being whole and perfect, that wholeness and perfection goes beyond this illusion of death.
Naturally,
and he said, you say XY is dead, but my God, open your eyes, they're not.
Like he says this with Carol.
The point is, I want to be a practitioner. How do I define wholeness? And according to my definition, if my definition is a physical physical perfect,
that's
what it is. If my definition is moves on, and I say this is wholeness, that's
then
fine.
Then you take responsibility about somebody else.
No,
my creation.
That in your world is whole and perfect.
Maybe we let her finish his lecture.
No, this is good. Think of this here. Who is the only person on earth?
I.
All right. What is the rest of the world?
My creation.
Your creation. Now, how did you create your creation? Did you create them to be well and sick and healthy and poor and all that good stuff? Yes. When are you going to stop doing that? When it's no more fun to be a human being. When you want to live on another dimension. The human dimension is always going to be the illusionary dimension.
Mm.
Perhaps another dimension is not illusionary, but I think all dimensions are illusions.
Mm-hmm.
And when we leave the illusion dimension and go return to our original purity and integrity, we're not here. We can't be here. Because by the very fact that we're on earth, we have to breathe. We have to eat. We have to sleep. We have to do these things. That's the creation of a human. And if you don't breathe, eat, and sleep, you're not human. You know that. No one would consider...
I don't believe that.
No one would consider you a human being if you did not eat, breathe, and sleep.
Yeah, but they wouldn't even know it.
So yeah.
It's not a matter whether they know it. Do you consider Saint Germain a human being when he was living in this experience of not eating, breathing, or sleeping and stuff like that?
No, I don't.
No. So you see, you have a different level of
he was considered as a human being by the world that
only because he gave that much of an illusion of it.
All right.
Exactly.
But he didn't eat with them, did he?
No.
He didn't sleep with them, did he?
No.
He didn't drink with them.
No. Yeah, but sometimes he gave these feasts, these parties he also did.
He ate?
No, he did apparently not eat.
It doesn't matter whether you ate or not, because if you are a spiritually illumined being, you can do anything.
Yeah,
exactly.
And you can appear as a human being.
That's the point.
That's what I mean.
Appearance.
That's what I mean, yeah.
But I'm saying the reality, if reality, you know how to say that, the
it's the reality.
The essence. And of course, the essence of you and I are essences too. But I'm glad you're thinking. I'm glad you're thinking. Perhaps you'll write something about it. Well, and you say, Herb, you say that if the individual wants to die, he can die. Now, why do you say if the individual wants to die, he can die? Stefan, who is the individual? So therefore, if you want to create the individual dead, you can do that, can't you? And the individual wants to die because you create him dead. Just like I was trying to point out with the father here and the son. And the son would say, I would never create something so terrible. My goodness sakes, how could I be so awful creating my father wanting to die? Follow that? And so to be accepted in human society, you can't say that. There was a boy in Milwaukee who was not a naughty boy. And he liked to eat boys. And so he'd chop them up and eat them. And he liked to eat young men. He'd chop them up and eat them. And he'd keep them in the refrigerator. And then he would eat them. And then one day, the refrigerator didn't work, and so he put it outside. And they came and hauled it away, and they found the bodies in there. And so then they got a hold of him and put him in prison and things like that. But now, how did he create people? Kind of gruesome, didn't he?
Yeah, kind of gruesome.
But you see, if we are masters, we're untouched by this. Doesn't mean a thing to us. It's just a matter of the thing that the guy did. And then he went to prison, and the guys in prison didn't like what he did. They thought that was not very nice. And so, accidentally, he got killed, you know. And but, you see, these are how these things work. We could, if Stefan were busy working with that guy, and he first heard about that guy, Stefan would immediately say, you're my creation, you're whole and perfect, you have never done any of these things, they're a pure illusion, and it is over with and done with. Would it be over with and done with?
Yes.
Sure. Would he ever have done it?
No.
Who would have written it up? Some science fiction writer, you know, some people who try to write crazy things. A lot of times it's true.
But this is actually what Stefan mentioned.
Yeah.
It is expressed after what we understand to be wholeness and perfection. It's got to be expressed.
Well, it's just creating an illusion or another illusion.
That's
just,
what I mean.
That's just it.
You know the illusion of O.J. Simpson, don't you?
Yeah.
And O.J. Simpson is supposed to have killed his wife and the man too, did he? Or just the wife?
No, just the wife.
Just the wife. And so they stripped him of his money, they stripped him of everything and everything. They didn't put him in prison, but everybody feels he did it. And now, according to one of the rags that's come out, the police are working on an individual who has done it, and Simpson was not guilty. Now, if he is not guilty, fantastic. Then he went through all that suffering for nothing, didn't he? Or did he go through that for nothing?
Mm-mm. There was a lesson behind.
For who?
For
everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody. Not to believe in appearances.
Yeah.
You see, it's so easy to believe in appearances, to look at the outer.
Yes, yeah.
And here he was, a wealthy man, and he was kind of tough on his wife. And he did a lot of tough things with her. But she could have left. She could have left a lot of times, but she didn't. And quite likely he wasn't that tough on her. You know? But a wealthy man who strikes his wife and gives her a black eye is thought terrible, whereas a poor man who strikes his wife and gives her a black eye is thought, well, that's just a drunk, you know, that's just whatever, you know. It all depends on your position in life. But again, if Stefan had in his consciousness that that person had never done those things and was innocent of those things, he'd be innocent. And death, as they roll him out in the gurney, take him down to the morgue, and he sits up and says, hey, you know, in your total consciousness. Now, does anyone ever die?
No.
So, it's just a game we play.
That's right.
It's just a game. And we have a lot of fun. Now, as we drive down these icy hills, do you ever feel a little bit of tense about the ice and so forth? If you do, and anything were to happen, which won't, then you put that cause in motion. You put that cause in motion. But if you see everyone driving, whether it's Stefan or Greg or anybody, perfectly, beautifully, smoothly, just harmoniously moving with the road like a dancing doll or something, that's great. But if you see any negativity, you're putting that in motion. Now, depending upon the vibrations of the various people here, it all makes a difference as to who is who and who's doing what. And we've come to the end of our tape here. So we will let that go then. I think we have had some very interesting things here.